Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome to the Viking Age podcast, the official podcast of thevikingage.com. My name is Chris Shad. I write for the Viking Age as well as Zone Coverage, Bring Me the News, and the Brookings Register. We do this every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We're also in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. But however you consume us, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. Today's guest, you see him on the screen, hailing from Tampa, Florida. He is the lead NFL draft analyst for Pro Football Focus and the co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange along with Connor Rogers. Most importantly, he is a man who demands that every barbecue platter has a three sides minimum. His name is Trevor Sikkema. Welcome back to the show, Trevor. How have you been?
Chris, thank you so much for having me, man. I've been great. A very exciting draft season that we have here to talk about on this show. But things are good, man. Now we're in the offseason. We get to reflect on the draft classes that were for the 2024 class. So I'm excited to talk about it here.
And of course, when we talk about the Minnesota Vikings draft class, we have to talk about JJ McCarthy, the Vikings trading up to select him with the 10th overall pick. You know, a lot of people are torn on him. There are some people who think there's this untapped upside with JJ McCarthy. And there's other people who think that he's like a drive the car prospect, similar to a Jared Goff or a Brock Purdy. Where do you see JJ McCarthy in that spectrum?
Well, let me tell you, you know, if the floor is Jared Goff or Brock Purdy, it's pretty dang good, right? I mean, those are two guys who have had a lot of success in this league and very clearly that archetype of a player. If you surround him with enough talent, I mean, they're making deep postseason runs every single year. The 49ers and the Detroit Lions right now with those two guys at the helm, they're Super Bowl caliber type of team. So I just find it funny, you know, if that's like the floor for McCarthy, you know, I think that you're doing pretty good with the prospect. But look, I think that he's got, you know, even more in the tank on top of that. And I don't mean to say that to take anything away from the success that guys like Purdy and Goff have been able to amass. But yeah, I think that he showed this past year that he really grew a lot as a quarterback. And it makes me think that there's a lot more room for him to grow as a 20-year-old and one of the youngest prospects that we had in this past class. You know, I'll be honest, I didn't like his 2022 tape. The first year with him as a starter, I did not think he was very good. People were talking to me about, oh, you know, he's a future top five pick, future top 10 pick, maybe a number one overall guy. And I'm like, man, he is so far away from that 2022 year. But everything seemed to get a lot better in 2023. I mean, the pocket presence, going through reads, the confident throws, pushing the ball further deep down the field. Yeah, Michigan had a really good offense around him, but they also had a handful of situations where they put the ball in his hand and they were like, all right, JJ, go make a play for us. And I think specifically the reason why I have so much faith in getting him to be able to be more than just that sort of game manager, facilitator, point guard label that a lot of people might want to put on him is, you know, when it was in those third and long situations, basically the only quarterback that was better was Bo Nix when it came to an efficiency and PFF grade wise. And there are metrics on those third and long situations where McCarthy was even better. You know, he had a higher average depth of target. He had a higher percentage of his throws that were actually past the sticks, you know, past the first down marker. He was going out and getting those first downs with his arm when it came to those kind of back against the wall, third and long situations. So he just handled everything a lot better in 2023. He improved in so many ways. And, you know, Michigan's program was a really good one, obviously a fantastic team that was around him, but he was a reason why they were good. So I think that he certainly has the ability to be a quarterback that could take a team on a deep postseason run someday.
How much do you buy into the whole narrative that it's a small sample size? Because I know people have brought up the metrics before. They've brought up how good McCarthy was when Michigan did put the ball in his hands. Is there something toward a player that may not have the same amount of opportunities, but is very efficient with those opportunities?
Yeah, you just have to weigh every single situation with different guys. I mean, if you know Harbaugh as a head coach, I mean, he's going to run the football, right? I mean, like the whole way that he built the culture at Michigan and the football program there is through the offensive line. And it was because he wanted to control the football. And they did not ask McCarthy to be a air raid run and shoot type of a quarterback. It was much more of a, hey, avoid the negatives. Don't put the ball in harm's way. But then in those couple of instances where we really need you to push it, we want you to be able to push it. We want to give you that confidence. So his situation just wasn't the same as it was for a Drake May or a Caleb Williams or a Jaden Daniels. Like the system that Jaden Daniels was in and JJ McCarthy, and it's so night and day, you can't even, it's hard to even compare their stats. So you just have to look at kind of what they're asked to do when they're asked to do it. And for what McCarthy was asked to do, I felt like he was very efficient. And that makes me feel like, okay, well, you know, I don't know exactly what his ceiling is. I don't think anybody does. But in 2022, you know, there's obviously a certain amount of opportunities that were on his plate. And he, I thought, performed okay. 2023, there were more opportunities on his plate and he performed even better. So that tells me, hey, put more food on there, right? Put more food on the plate. Let's see how much he can handle. So to me, it's just I don't really hold it against him that he wasn't in some sort of, you know, spread system or air raid system or something that was much more pass happy. I'm not going to hold that against him. I think that there'll be plenty of time to tell what he is capable of once he gets into his rookie season, second year in the league, third year in the league in the NFL.
You know what this reminds me of? I mean, I play dynasty fantasy football, and I had the number one pick in the draft one year where Jonathan Taylor was coming out, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was coming out, and obviously as a Minnesotan, I watched Jonathan Taylor just destroy the Gophers at Wisconsin. I'm like, this dude's a unicorn, and everybody's like, well, no, I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, he can catch the ball, like, he's bulletproof, basically, and I'm like, well, Jonathan Taylor has never been asked to catch the ball at Wisconsin. It's basically take the ball and run forward as fast, you know, as hard, as fast as you can. Like, that's how I feel about JJ McCarthy. It's when you give him more opportunities, he should be able, you know, he's going to be throwing to Justin Jefferson now. He's going to be throwing to Jordan Addison, who is having a, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but he's having a very good OTAs right now. TJ Hawkinson's eventually going to be in the mix. What part do you think the Vikings infrastructure plays when JJ McCarthy is stepping into an offense with plenty of weapons and even plenty of protection with Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill?
I think it's a really good situation, right? Because the offensive line's only getting better in Minnesota. I think it's one of the better offensive lines in the NFL, and you got two young guys on the bookend tackles. You absolutely love that. I think the interior is going to continue to get better. And it's a really good situation there up front, which is something that he's obviously used to coming from Michigan with one of the best offensive lines in the country over the last 2 years. It also doesn't hurt that you're probably going to have the richest wide receiver in the NFL in Justin Jefferson to be able to throw the football to, right? I mean, this is a guy who, no matter what kind of coverage he's going up against, no matter what assignment it was, no matter where he was lined up, Jefferson's been open over the last 3 or 4 years of his career. And so I think to have that wide receiver one caliber player, obviously TJ Hawkinson as well, you know, they're hoping the run game is obviously just as steady and just a part of their success as a balanced offense can be. And I think even outside of the personnel that I kind of rattled off there, Jordan Addison as well, I think that having Kevin O'Connell to me is the part that gives me the most faith, because I just love how he sees things. I love how he sees offense in the field and getting the ball in the hands of the best playmakers in the best ways. And I just have a lot of faith in him to be able to do that. So whatever is an appropriate amount to ask of JJ McCarthy throughout the building portion of his career and his rookie year and his second year, I think that O'Connell's not only going to be able to recognize that, but put that into motion. So it certainly helps that he has different things at his disposal, right? He could say like, okay, well, we're going to build things around the run game a little bit to start. Or okay, we're going to have you look at the tight end as a primary for a little bit here. Or, hey, we're just running everything through Justin Jefferson. He's one of the best, if not the best wide receiver in the NFL. Just we're going to make him the primary absolutely every opportunity that we can. He's going to find the right percentages of how to make that work. So Minnesota is, and even throughout the pre-draft process, Minnesota was always the spot that I love the most for JJ McCarthy. And then like also Drake May as well. Like these were two guys who I would have loved to see in Minnesota. And now that we do have McCarthy in Minnesota, I think it's going to turn out well for him.
Do you think that McCarthy was the right guy? Because I mean, looking in hindsight, I mean, that's the fun part of the draft, right? You go, well, I would have done this. I would have done this. There are rumors that the Vikings really like Drake May. They wanted to trade up. Michael Penix was on the radar as well.
Right.
And you added the smoke with the other quarterbacks. Like, where do you see McCarthy in terms of this year's quarterback class?
So I had him as QB4. You know, I had Caleb Williams very clearly QB1, but then I had Drake May very clearly QB2. And then it was sort of a debate with QB3 when it came to Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy. It was a little bit of fit and situation. Like, I love where Daniels landed with Washington, and I like where McCarthy landed in Minnesota. So I actually really like that landing spot for both of those guys relative to where they went. But, you know, it's hard for me to not sit here and say, like, yeah, I would have liked for them to go up to get Drake because I had Drake ranked higher. I thought he was the better quarterback. But it all just kind of comes down to how you acquired this player, because very clearly, and I go back to January, and I tried to say this throughout the whole draft process. Jerod Mayo in New England, after Bill Belichick was let go and they made him the head coach, he said after one of his introductory press conference interviews, he was like, "We're going to pick a player at a very important position that is very talented at number 3 overall." And he kind of smiled when he said it. And he basically, like, it was like, okay, we're going to fix the quarterback issue. We're going to pick a quarterback at number 3. You only do that if you are very, very comfortable and confident with Caleb Williams, with Jaden Daniels, and with Drake May. You don't say that if you don't believe that that's the case. So knowing that, it always felt like New England was going to say, unless we are blown away by an offer, we're not moving off of number 3. So for Minnesota, even getting number 23 23 could trust myself. The instincts were right. Even getting number 23 from the Texans, they probably called New England and said, okay, we'll give you 11, we'll give you 23, and we'll give you something else. And New England was probably like, no, we want 11, we want 23, we want a first next year, and then probably something the year after that as well. And so when you bring into that context, would I like May at that price for Minnesota or McCarthy at the price that they only had to pay to move up one spot for Minnesota? I would take McCarthy. I would, especially certainly given what they did with Dallas Turner and how it really feels like their 2025 draft class could be a lot more depleted now. I think the price tag was always going to be way too high for Drake May. So I think that they made the right decision sticking with their plan to attack wherever McCarthy was going to be. And it only needed a one spot trade up.
I'm going to talk about Dallas Turner in just a second since you brought him up. But first, I want to ask the one question that's on every Vikings fan's mind right now. When do you think JJ McCarthy starts for the Minnesota Vikings?
Ooh, I just did an exercise where I took a look at this. It's them hosting the Lions. What is this, like week 7, week 8?
Yeah, I think they go to Detroit.
The first time that they play the Lions, they're hosting. And the reason why I picked this game as the spot for a McCarthy starting spot is because I think they're going to give Sam Darnold a fair shake at this and basically say, like, hey, we're probably going to give you at least 4 to 6 weeks to show your stuff, you know, to put something out there for whoever your next team is going to be. And they're going to do right by Sam. They're not just going to be like, you know, obviously if McCarthy blows them away in training camp and preseason, it's like, okay, we got to start this guy right away. They will. But I don't think that's going to be the case. So I think they're going to give Sam 4 to 6 weeks. And if they give him 6 weeks, then that gets them, well, I should say 5 weeks. If they give him 5 weeks, that gets them to the bye week. So then they have the bye week, and then they host the Detroit Lions. And playing the Lions as your first start would be rough, but it's a game at home, and it's after a bye week. So that is the spot that I think makes a lot of sense for them to not only fulfill their promise or words to Darnold of probably what they said to him when they signed him, but also giving McCarthy those 2 weeks to figure it out and get in there with the ones for the bye week and then hosting at home a good team and a divisional team with the Detroit Lions.
And I do apologize for that. The Vikings actually go to Detroit in the final game of the year. Yeah. It's one of those things. I feel like they've played the Lions in Detroit to end the year, like the last 4 or 5 straight years, maybe with like a game in Chicago or something. But my brain kind of went haywire on me there, you know, and even too, as you mentioned it, the first 6 games, they're pretty tough. I mean, you go to New York. I don't know about the Giants. I don't know about Daniel Jones. That's a tough place to play. But then you come home, you get the 49ers. That's not an easy task. You host the Houston Texans, who went to the divisional round last year. They should be even better this year. The Packers on the road, not a great task. You go over the pond to play the Jets in London, and then you have that Lions game at home. So I mean, I could see Sam Darnold getting a fair shake at things. You know, let's move on to Dallas Turner here, because I think that's also another thing that Viking fans are kind of curious about. Christian Darrisaw was at OTAs on Wednesday, I believe, talking to reporters. And apparently Dallas Turner's spin move is very good, because he said when he saw it, he said, "Holy F." I would say the full word, but I have a new audience of second graders that maybe subscribe to the show after, you know, doing a project for a friend. But, you know, were you surprised that Dallas Turner fell to the Vikings at 17? And they did have to trade up, but I mean, there were a slew of offensive players that went at the beginning of the draft. Like, shocked Dallas Turner was there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, after the Falcons didn't go defense at 8, I feel like Turner could have gone off the board at 8. But there weren't a lot of other landing spots in the top 15 where I was like, yeah, defense right here. It was always going to be a really offensive heavy draft. So I'm a little shocked that like Latu lasted as long as he did. Jared Verse lasted as long as he did. Dallas Turner lasted. Like I am a little shocked just because those guys are good football players, but the offensive side of the ball was so stacked in this draft that it made sense that you're kind of pushing defense down a little bit, even with those guys being really good. So, hey, credit to the Vikings. You know, they saw an opportunity where they wanted to move up and really get a difference-making edge rusher, somebody that they believe could obviously replace Danielle Hunter. I know they brought in John Grenard as well, but, you know, getting a young, hopefully franchise type of pass rusher on their team for them to build around for the long term. They gave up a pretty penny, right, to go up and get him. And I think that that trade price is something that you can discuss. They seem to believe they're getting more comp picks next year than I feel like they are, but you know, they're at least getting a high one for Kirk Cousins. And so you're at least getting something back there. So you're offsetting the trade price a little bit, but you know, when it comes to Turner's overall ability, I'm not shocked that Christian Darrisaw has seen it already, because Dallas Turner, and the reason why a lot of people had him edge one in this past class is because he could do things athletically from an explosive standpoint and a flexibility standpoint, I would say, with the bend and how twitched up he is and that agility. Like what he could do was pretty standout in what was even a deeper edge rush class this past year. So not a shock that he's already kind of showing that off. That's going to be his bread and butter at the NFL level, winning with that speed and athleticism. So him trying to make a difference with that as his calling card is exactly what his scouting report was.
Is it safe to assume that Turner's versatility makes him a great fit for Brian Flores' defense? Because the Vikings had Danielle Hunter the last couple of years, put up big sack numbers, especially last year under Brian Flores, but it never really seemed like he grasped that outside linebacker role, and he still was able to get double-digit sacks. But I feel like Turner is a little more versatile. He can drop into coverage. He can make a pick. He can rush the passer. How much does Turner's versatility play into the fact that he is an elite edge rushing prospect?
Yeah, I think he's a great fit. I do that athleticism. It's not just going towards the line of scrimmage. It's going back from the line of scrimmage as well. Like this is somebody who, if you wanted to drop him into coverage to kind of confuse the offense, like he gives you a really long wingspan. He gives you that good lateral agility. Like he can drop and be an effective zone player. Now he's not going to be, you know, dropping like a Mike linebacker or anything in a Tampa 2 defense or something like that. But he is somebody who, if you drop him into coverage, is not just a thing where it's like, okay, like let's try to disguise what the offense is seeing here. Like you could actually probably get some production out of him, and maybe his presence and his athleticism might be annoying enough to warrant the no throw in situations where other defenders, maybe that's the case. So his time at Alabama, I think he's got experience with that because he played in a similar odd front while he was playing for that Nick Saban defense. Flores likes to keep things very versatile. And the way that you keep things the most versatile is you draft really good athletes, because they're not going to have those athletic limitations for you to be able to deploy them in a handful of ways. So I love the edge rush room that they have overall, right? It's not just John Grenard as well. Like it's Vander Van Ginkel, who's coming off career high numbers when it comes to pressure. And Brian Flores, he likes to keep those guys fresh. He likes to throw a lot of different things at you. So I just love the overall edge rusher room that they have built. And Turner is absolutely, I think, going to play a major role for them.
Looking at the rest of the draft, the Vikings selected Kyrie Jackson, cornerback out of Oregon, Walter Rouse, an offensive tackle out of Oklahoma, Will Reichard, a kicker out of Alabama, Michael Juergens, a guard out of Wake Forest, and Levi Drake Rodriguez, a defensive tackle out of Texas A&M Commonwealth on day 3 of the draft. Out of those prospects, does anybody jump off to you? And, you know, was this kind of a matter of quality over quantity for the Vikings this year?
Yeah, so I don't know a lot about the seventh rounders that they took, but the two guys that they took at the beginning of day three, Kyrie Jackson, I think was a really solid selection for them. I know they have some guys in the secondary that still have some promise that they're hoping break out a little bit here. You know, Lewis Cine, Andrew Booth Jr., right? Those are two guys that they're hoping have their best years upcoming. But I know Mekhi Blackmon was able to showcase some things last year that were good. But getting another corner like Kyrie Jackson, who brings you that rare athleticism at his as longer size of 6'2", 6'3", I think that those are guys that you always want to bet on. And so, again, for a Flores defense, love that he's getting to play in a situation where Flores is going to let him be a little bit more aggressive and playing up the line of scrimmage and playing press coverage and using that length all the time. And so I like the Kyrie Jackson selection as well. Walter Rouse is somebody that really impressed me when I was at the Shrine Bowl. He was one of the offensive linemen I think was really, really standing out, whether it was going up against Mo Kamara or guys like Xavier Thomas or whoever it was. I felt like Rouse was really standing out as one of the better offensive linemen in that group. So I felt like, hey, early fourth round selection could have been in the cards for him. I think he ended up going, 177 in the sixth round. So to me, that was big time value because I had a much higher day three grade on him. So I think that he's really good value, gives you really good depth as an offensive tackle piece. We mentioned obviously O'Neal and Christian Darrisaw as guys that are already established on that team, but getting those backup offensive tackles, I think he could be a really good swing tackle for you to play in the left or right side. So those are the two guys that I know they were the next on the list. So they're probably the easiest to pick, but those are the ones who I could really see making a difference as depth players and maybe even potential starters.
This is just kind of a out of left field question when it comes to the day three picks though. But in Minnesota, we tend to hate kickers because we have Gary Anderson, we have Blair Walsh, a lot of scar tissue when it comes to kickers in this state. Drafting a kicker in the sixth round, is that something that you're like, hey, if you like the guy, go ahead and take him? Or is that something that you're kind of like, hey, maybe it's better getting that additional guard or maybe that depth corner or whatever? I'm just curious on what your take is on that.
Kickers are there's like no science on kickers, right? Because there's no shortage of guys who have the leg talent to kick it even 50 yards through the uprights. Like there's no shortage. Guys in the NFL or even not in the NFL, we've seen people who come from playing soccer or rugby or whatever, like come in and they can kick it through the uprights 50 yards down the field. So like leg talent is not really the thing. It's just mental. Like it's like golf, right? It's just a brutal you versus the man in the mirror every time you step up to the ball type of a scenario. And so if you feel like you have a kicker that is made of the right stuff mentally, I don't have a problem taking a, day three flyer on one of those guys. And Reichert, what is he? I don't know if he was college football's all-time leading scorer or Alabama's all-time leading scorer, right?
I think it was the FBS all-time leading scorer.
He's a record holder one way or the other. So the man knows how to kick the football. And obviously he's been kicking in some clutch situations playing for Alabama in the SEC. So if you sit down, you interview him, you talk to him, and you think that he is mentally tough for the game, sure. This is somebody who's going to hopefully be able to really help your offense out and help your team out on the scoreboard. And if that's the case, if you think you got a guy who can handle it at the NFL level, sure. Taking a flyer on him at the end of day three, I understand.
All right. Well, I promise that's all we got for kicker questions. So I just wanted to toss that one out there for you. You know a lot of stuff. You got your hands in a lot of stuff over at PFF. What's going on at Pro Football Focus and the NFL Stock Exchange right now?
Oh, man. So, at PFF, we're going through our yearly series where we are ranking certain positions within the NFL, like top 32 quarterbacks in the NFL, top edge rushers in the NFL, top wide receivers in the NFL. So go check out all those lists. It's not just me who's putting them out. It's everybody else who is writing at PFF as well. And then when it comes to the NFL Stock Exchange podcast, we've taken a little bit of time off. We always take a little bit of time off after the draft, but then my co-host Connor Rogers was getting married, so we had his wedding and then his honeymoon after that. And so now we are very soon getting back into summer scouting. We're going to take a look at some of the best stars in college football for the upcoming season with an eye towards the 2025 NFL draft, and that's going to be starting, I believe, next week.
Awesome. And where can people follow you on social media?
At Tampa Bay Trey, basically everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, but I don't really post anything on TikTok. I'm just there to watch the funny cooking videos. So that's but it's just Tampa Bay Trey on all platforms.
Well, Trevor, thanks you once again for coming on the Viking Age podcast. But that's all the time we have for today. We do this every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We're also in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. But however you consume us, don't forget to rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. For Trevor Sikkema, I am Chris Shad. This has been the Viking Age podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.